reaching Cairo.
News to this capital at mid-afternoon yesterday that Japan had attacked the United States in the Pacific. The city's atmosphere was already tense since early morning because of the important elections being staged in Buenos Aires province. And the first reaction of most Argentines upon hearing the ominous wail reserved for news of supreme importance was fear that an armed uprising had been provoked by the bitterly contested polling. I watched the incredulous expressions on the faces of many citizens as they read instead on the newspaper bulletin boards that Japanese planes were dropping, and I heard one old man note as he read, "Perilous, but the Japanese must be." For this morning, Cyrus Nonstrun stood in front while special policemen remained on duty in the shock that the attack brought here is explained that the public has attached to the Far Eastern crisis. Only yesterday morning, La Prensa ran a leading article that began, quote, "There are good reasons to believe that Japan will avoid a war with the United States," end quote. And during the week, newspapers pushed the Caruso-Washington talks to inside pages in favor of war development. The official reaction is surprised, tempered with the reserve. Interrupting President Castillo, he could not comment on news until officially informed that Argentine foreign policy policy. But later, Iñárritu, the Argentine lengthy conferences with Norm Ambassador, declined to firm its position until the United States had defined theirs. This was interpreted by diplomats here to mean that if the United States, by a ringing declaration of war, brands Japan as the aggressor, that Argentina may not issue another neutrality decree, but will instead re-examine its position in the light of Pan-American declarations of continental solidarity against foreign aggression. The lead to such action has already come from Uruguay, where President Baldomir declared yesterday afternoon that in the face of undeniable Japanese aggression, Uruguay could not remain neutral and would offer base facilities to the United States. Observers most familiar with Argentine policy commented here last night, however, that the biggest factor affecting the Argentine decision will be other international repercussions to the Japanese attack, such as a possible German declaration of war on the United States as an ally of Japan. This is Everett A. Bauman speaking for Buenos Aires. I return you now to New York.
We turn next to the Panama Canal Zone, which now is undergoing a total blackout. Here is Pete Brennan speaking direct from Panama City.
Hello, NBC. This is Pete Brennan from Panama City. A steaming hot night, and today's excitement hasn't helped to cool us off down here. Every home in the Canal Zone, every Army and Navy garrison and base, completely dark, and has been since 7 o'clock. The civilian men and women who operate the Canal State of the Union are sitting in the screen verandas of their homes and wondering what tomorrow and tomorrow's tomorrow may bring them. But they are not afraid. They place their faith in the future, the Army garrisons along the banks of the canal, and in the Navy forces afloat and ashore here. On every listening post in the unconquered kingdom, the armed forces of Uncle Sam are grimly alert. Occasionally, searchlights sweep the waters of Panama Bay, the Pacific entrance to the canal. Quarters there will be no sleep tonight for the men in command. Although any attack on the canal seems in hold at the moment, their program calls for complete seasoned vigilance. Above all, they watch for any surprise maneuver by Japan. Meanwhile, Panama City is curiously bright by contrast with the neighboring towns of Balboa and Anton on the Pacific side of the isthmus. It is deemed best to keep lights on as usual in the capital of the Republic, lest the darkness hinder the search for the 300 or more Japanese who lived here and whose arrest was ordered today. Dinner saloons and beer gardens were open for business as usual, and thousands of Panamanians and a number of Americans gathered in the public places in Panama City to discuss the war. Panama and its roundup of the Japanese, and also of several Germans suspected as Axis agents, unquestionably proved its loyalty to its good friend, the United States, today by acting immediately. Plans had been made by Japan to to evacuate our nationals who reside here, the ship was not due until late this month. So instead of sailing for the homeland, a somewhat curious collection of barbers, fishermen, and swell merchants, many of them believed to be ranking officers of the Japanese Navy, are to be turned over to the United States for internment in the Canal Zone. Panama also placed the Axis legations under surveillance. This little republic thus proclaimed to the world that any attack on the United States by a non-American power is likewise an attack on Panama. When the news of Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor was flashed today, military police and shore patrols immediately rounded up all Army and Navy personnel and ordered their return to their stations. Simultaneously, Army airplanes on both sides of the isthmus took to the air in large numbers and remained up until after dark. After dark, there was less activity, and at midnight, the skies were clear, save for a waning moon. There was great activity at the quarantine station late tonight, as the Japanese rounded up by Panama were collected. Some merchant ships, which were scheduled to leave the Canal Zone ports today, were detained. Although the Canal Zone generally was completely dark, the locks were brightly lit and under added guard. Automobiles were allowed to travel through the Canal Zone with lights unless a warning siren was blown. I now return you to NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Pete Brennan speaking directly from Panama City, Panama Canal Zone. Our news roundup continues as we again switch to South America. Go ahead, Rio de Janeiro.
This is Rio de Janeiro speaking. Brazil received the news of the attack today in Hawaii by the Japanese with wonderment. Here we leave the 34th. The news spread over the city came to light wildfire. Larger crowds collected around with our speakers set up throughout the city, and every radio station was casting the news. This is opinion gathering in cosmopolitan cities, Rio de Janeiro, is that the United States is ample able to defend herself against Japan and our group in Toronto Sam. Official Brazil hasn't yet been heard from. United States Ambassador Joseph M. Carpery officially notified Valdez, Japan had declared war on the United States after launching an overwhelming attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. Later, Mr. Carpery and the Minister for Foreign Affairs 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 were carefully declined to state what had been discussed. It is believed here that Brazil will not issue any formal statement until the United States officially declares war on Japan. However, we only recall the recent statement of Senor Aranha that if any American nation was attacked, Brazil, whether or not this statement is to be backed up, it will tell. But we all believe that Brazil will back up the United States. We'll be Latin American countries for a meeting for their second time night. The Havana Pan-American Council situation is an opportunity to create confusion in this country. That's possible. Around the Nazis declare the Rio Grande do Sul. Yes, it will Germany get them together for this and the help of the Franco-Hispanic element that is to ignite. I will send you to the National Broadcasting Company.
News now from another of our neighbor nations to the south. For Mexico's reach, we take you now direct to Mexico City.
Hello, and report from Mexico City at this time. We turn now to New York. Now to New York.
From the NBC newsroom in the broad Pacific, we go to Manila in the Philippine Islands.
Speaking from Manila. It is now approximately 1:12 p.m. at December the 8th in Manila. December the 8th in Manila. December the 8th in Manila. December the 8th. Since first week this morning, when we first bought Japanese, part of the Japanese settlement in the Philippines, morning, by the station, completely demolished.
As high as 50.
Better parry on the beam,
during
morning.
Also, officially, concentration of air visited by snow crossing.
This morning, at the Sarah Pan-American Airways base at Guam, has been bombed,
has only been now confirmed. We understand that not only was the air base bombed, but machine guns as well.
And at the present time, huge barrel fires and gasoline rounds. It was also reported an American trans 102,000 miles out of Manila. That if this report is true, it must be either the old American street, either the old American street, either the old American fort, which is located in the eventuated route out of Shanghai.
The money,
the trunk, and the humpboat weight was seized by the Japanese near Shanghai. The Philippine Shanghai. The Philippine guards and soldiers. Machine guns have been in downtown Manila.
Are closely guarded.
All telephone communications have no doubt temporarily, and that it will be all banks at best to accommodate the rushing crash activity. Although Lindsay Fullerton is actually being done.
Directed
Japanese. Then, Manila has,
we have picked up several reports
of the world already been bombed. Manila has not yet been bombed. Killed and bombed. Out to the United States. Camp John was bombed at 10 o'clock this morning. Of the American nuclear system down in Rockman, but left was bombed over Davao this morning and wrecked the Bureau Post radio station. The Pan American Clipper that left here yesterday for Hong Kong was bombed while lying in the airport. All passengers and crew are reported safe, as no one was on board when the attack came. This makes it official, rather, the news that that Hong Kong has already been bombed. We have also received the news unofficially that Singapore is now under attack. Japanese troops have already landed in North Borneo, but from information that we have, it seems that they have been repelled by British troops there. Of course, you all know that the Dutch East Indies have declared war against Japan, and it will not be long now, we expect, before there will be some order out of the chaos which seems to be prevalent in the Far East today. It appears that the Japanese forces are striking everywhere at one time, apparently not in great force, but harassing troops, navy, and air fleet in order to keep the strength scattered. We have no more news at present, so we will turn you back to the NBC.
Thank you, Manila. Back in the NBC newsroom in New York. And now, ladies and gentlemen, some editorial comments from the leading newspapers of the United States. The New York Times. There is only one possible answer to Japan's attack. That answer is an immediate declaration of war by the United States against Japan. This is so clear and so inescapable that Congress can be relied upon to act with all possible speed and to give its answer with that unanimity which will speak for a united nation. The real battle of our times will not be fought in the Far East. It will be fought on the English Channel. We can count on our government to recognize this fact. We can count on it to plan a strategy of war which takes account of the imperative necessity of maintaining an uninterrupted flow of strength to the main battlefield in Europe. The New York Times. That was that editorial comment from the New York Times. Now the New York Daily News. When you are attacked, there is nothing to do but fight. And when a nation gets into war, the way to fight it is to fight to the hilt, with the remorseless aim of winning the war. It's bad enough to get into a war, any war, but it's infinitely worse to lose it once you're in. The time has come for all of us to stand by the president in the general aim of winning the war, while reserving the right, as the British people and press have done throughout the rigors of this war to date, of criticizing government methods of all kinds pertaining to the war effort. The Chicago Tribune. The United States is now at war, and we have but one task ahead, to strike with all we have. The Tribune has consistently been opposed to the administration's foreign policies in the past. The New York Herald Tribune. The attack itself, an act of naked aggression committed while Japanese envoys were actually in discussion with our State Department and the President's message lay before the Emperor, came as a dismaying shock. We know that we state no more than the simple truth when we declare that this war against our enemies, wherever they may be, will be fought to a victorious end with the last energy, the last resource, and the last ounce of determination of every American man and woman. The Chicago Daily News. Today the United States is at war. We write these words in sorrow. We write them also with a sense undoubtedly shared by a vast number of Americans, not exactly of relief at this tragic ending of a long nerve strain to which we've all been subjected, but of deep faith that all is now somehow for the best. We've tried in every reasonable way to avoid what has happened. Thanks now to Japan, the deep division of opinion that has rent and partly paralyzed our country will be swiftly healed. Once more, we shall be a united people. From the Washington Post, with a blinding flash, the true inwardness of the world crisis now stands revealed for the American people. This was never an intra-European war. It was intended from the beginning as a world war, and America was marked out as the final object of attack. On that assumption, thank heaven, all our defense plans have been prepared. From the Chicago Daily Times, an Axis power has started war against the United States. The conflagration, about which President Roosevelt in 1937 warned the Western Hemisphere, has spread to our land. A lunatic Japan, under the lash of a lunatic Germany, has commenced hostilities. It is now about 6:30 in the morning in London, ladies and gentlemen. British papers are on the streets, and for the reaction of the tight little isle, we take you now to London.
Thank you, Jack Costello in New York. This is London, First Mate speaking. Monday morning front bases have practically given over to the new wars which Japan started on Sunday. Two wars in name only between Japan and our country, this country, and now Canada and the Dutch East Indies. Wars which really are only the expected extension of Hitler's invasion. Every available item from American sources appears in these papers. Comparisons of the latest estimates of United States and Japanese strength. Everything that can supplement the overriding news of the Nazi-like attacks by Japan. These papers at first glance might be your papers this morning. Yours is the news they carry, all they can get of it. Southwest columns quote Japanese sources as announcing a naval battle between Japanese and British and American naval units going on now in the Western Pacific. They carry a message, so far unconfirmed, announcing a Japanese air attack on Singapore and the sinking of two British cruisers. And the report that the Japanese flag now flies on the United States warship Wake, taken over by the Japanese when they seized Shanghai and sank the British gunboat Petrel. The Daily Express says that as a member of the Axis, Japan will presumably be entitled to call upon Germany and Italy to declare war upon the United States. As matters stand, it would seem that that move could be nothing but an unnecessary formality. Japan may be able to persuade Germany to go through that motion, but to date her tactics have been to strike without warning as Japan did and let it go at that. Editorially, there's virtual unanimity throughout the press. The bluff is over. The war that Japan has meant in all her dealings with Britain and America over the last few years is open war at last. Japan's given credit for the naval power she's amassed. But, says the Express editorial, she faces the two greatest naval powers, not as she'd hoped separately, but together. Don't expect, the editorial goes on, that the early stages of the sea fighting will be easy. There will be more adversities, and they're expected. For many years, the advantages of Japan's position have been fully realized by the United States. Both Britain and the United States in the past have had to prepare for the possibility of facing her sometime alone. Japan says this fighter still has the advantage of position, and it adds immensely to her naval power. They have sea sense, the Japanese. They're ruthless fighters, proved in China and proved Sunday, yesterday, as she started this war. In Britain, she now faces a power fully geared for war. And in America, another power fully geared at least on the industrial and naval side. American industrial strength, continues the editorial, is so vast that she can probably still supply arms to Britain and Russia. But now the United States has her own fight, and factories here must be ready to provide some of the weapons they'd expected from the United States. There are stories of Japanese embassy officials found playing bridge, not believing the report of Japan's attack.
news, they said.
Stories of other Japanese equally surprised when reporters found them playing billiards.
An Indian commentator, broadcasting from London to his own country this morning, said, in effect, we have long known, and it's often been said, that Japan sooner or later would attack India. And he added that he was able to tell his listeners tonight that that menace to India could now be dealt with by the United States.
At least that's what he told me he was going to say.
The International News Service in London asked the Soviet embassy here whether, in view of the friendly relations between the three countries, Russia would accord Britain and the United States the use of bases in Siberia. The embassy spokesman said that, of course, they were watching developments with the greatest interest, but had not so far heard from their government, and therefore, at this moment, couldn't make a statement or even speculate regarding that question. Such a matter as the use of Siberian bases obviously must come direct from Moscow. About 4:30 this morning, I drove by the Japanese embassy. The square was quiet, deserted. The taxi driver used his flashlight. We were in front of number 40. The embassy is number 37.
3 doors away.
He flashed it again at number 38.
I said, that's all right. Don't flash it on the embassy.
He did. And on the steps in the beam stood two silent policemen. There was no one else around.
Thank you, Jack Costello. Again, we'll return you now to New York.
Thank you, Fred Bade in London. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our national anthem.
Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra with Miss Lucy Monroe singing our national anthem. This is the National Broadcasting Company.